Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, Free Speech Central. Go there, republicbroadcasting.org, send shekels. Go to nationalbugle.com, download the Co-Certified app. I know the high holidays are over, at least I think they're over, but you still want to know if you're eating kosher food. You want to know if you're living in a kosher certified society. We want to know these things. So download the Co-Certified app. Today is Monday. I have with me Mark Collett. Mark, sorry to keep you waiting.
No problem at all. It's good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you, and you come every Monday, and I appreciate that. And I know last Monday, everybody knows we had some below-par sound quality. But today we have above-par sound quality, so that's all good. And there's been a lot has gone on the past week. Actually, I thought Donald Trump had a pretty good week last week. I mean, we had all gotten tired of winning, and so he decided to stop winning. And for the past year, he's been on a giant losing streak. But Maybe we got tired of losing and he's going to win some. So he, in spite of all of the Washington establishment and his own administration that he appointed, I know, but still, in spite of everything, he has insisted on pulling out of Syria. And it doesn't matter if the Turks beat the Kurds in a war. All of Washington is crying out that we have to fight the Kurds' war for them so that they can, create an independent state and annex territory and whatever. And Donald Trump says, well, that's actually not our job. It's not our job. And, we did elect him to be the, as ironic as it sounds, we did elect him to be the voice of reason. And last week he was the voice of reason. How is this played over in your neck of the woods? Or are they saying that we mustn't abandon those Kurds who have been so valiant as we fight their wars?
Yeah, I think the way it was played out by the media was that the Kurds were great allies to America. They were great defenders of democracy. They were basically on the front lines constantly fighting the good fight against ISIS, and that for Donald Trump to abandon the Kurds, for him to pull his forces out, to pull American troops out, and just to let Turkey roll in and attack the Kurds was a great betrayal. I think that was the narrative, and I think people felt quite sorry for the Kurds. I think people generally felt that it was some kind of betrayal that the US would pull out without any assurances that people who fought alongside them were going to be treated well afterwards.
So here's the thing. If you look at the past several decades, the Kurds have been encouraged. I think Henry Kissinger was encouraging them to revolt against the Shah of Iran. That would actually be kind of surprising, because Henry Kissinger and the Shah got along pretty well. But maybe it wasn't Kissinger and the Shah. But, I mean, they've been encouraged to revolt against the Iranians, against the Iraqis, against the Syrians. And, of course, they have been in this open revolt against the Turks for many years. And you can have sympathy for them. They're a big ethnic group. Although, I'll tell you one thing. The Kurds, there are going to be Kurds in the future. There might not be white British people in the future because you're being invaded. They are not being invaded. They just aren't. They don't have their own state, but they have their own lands. They have their own ethnic integrity, and we don't. But at any rate, here's the lesson for the Kurds. The Kurds want a big state. They want the regions of Turkey and Iran and Iraq and Syria that they dwell in. And when you're talking about Syria, it's a tiny little corner of Syria that they've historically dwelt in. They want this. And you know something? Lots of other countries are perfectly happy to use the Kurds as a weapon against their own enemies. So the Israelis are happy to use the Kurds against Saddam Hussein. and the Americans or whomever, or the Israelis when you get down to it, they might be happy to use the Kurds against Turkey, or the Turks might want to use, you know, there's lots of groups, lots of countries that are happy to use them as pawns. But at the end of the day, there's no country, with the exception of Israel, that actually wants to rewrite the map of the Middle East in their favor. And the Israelis can't do it on their own. And, you know, the Israelis are out for themselves. And so the Kurds, I think actually the Kurds in Syria are starting to wake up to the new reality that they're not going to have the Americans create a statelet for them, like they did it actually in the Iraq War, and so they're going to have to their next best option is for a united Syria, which they live in Syria, and that would probably be a solution. If the Syrian government is going to control all that territory, and the Syrian government will give assurances to Turkey that Syrian territory won't be used to support Kurdish separatists within Turkey, that's probably how it's going to be resolved. I think actually we're on the eve of a resolution of the problem, not a big explosion of it. But that's what I think. I don't know what you hear over there, but I wanted to get those thoughts out.
Well, I know that both France and the U.S. have placed sanctions now on Turkey for their sort of shelling or invasion of Syria. And I also know that Russia has warned Turkey rather harshly not to continue doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's best probably not to poke the Russian bear. I don't think Turkey wants to go there. So I can see potentially this sort of blowing over quite rapidly. But I also thought that there was probably quite a degree of opportunism here in terms of the way the leftist media attacked Donald Trump over this. Because on one hand, people are saying, look, it's not the US's business. It's none of the US's business what goes on in the Middle East. And we constantly say, it's none of the US's business. The US needs to withdraw from the Middle East. Middle Eastern problems are to be dealt with in the Middle East. And Donald Trump, to his credit, has withdrawn US troops and said, look, I've been trying to get the troops out. What goes on there now is up to the people of the Middle East, which really is pretty much what we've said for a long time. And I think the Democrats attacking him so, you know, virulently over withdrawing troops and saying, you know, the Middle East business, you know, belongs in the Middle East. It belongs to the people of the Middle East, and no more American blood should be shed there. I think that's pretty much what we would do. I mean, I personally wouldn't commit British troops to deal with issues in the Middle East. I wouldn't send British troops to die for the Kurds. So I can't really condemn Donald Trump too harshly for what he's done, if at all, in fact.
Yeah. No, you know, there are people who say, well, he did the right thing for at the wrong time or without preparation or whatever. Donald Trump doesn't get to do things the way he wants to do it. I mean, he announced this pullout in last December, and he was jumped on. He wound up firing his Secretary of Defense, but in the end didn't withdraw the troops, and that was because of massive opposition from all quarters. And now he's doing it. Well, I mean, here's the thing. I think the Turks have basically accomplished what they want already. They don't want to genocide these people. What they just didn't want to have the you know, their entire border with Syria, and it's their biggest land border is their border with Syria, and the bulk of that land border with Syria was occupied by Kurds, who for the most part actually don't live there. That, I mean, they only live in this one corner of Syria, but had taken advantage of this civil war to take control of a lot of the border region with Turkey, which even areas where they don't traditionally live. And from the point of view of Turkey. That's alarming because there has been cooperation between the Syrian Kurds and this communist group, which everybody calls a terrorist group, the communist PKK group, the Kurdish Workers Party, that is trying to get independence for Kurds in Turkey. Well, the whole reason that the Syrian Kurds could conquer so much territory in Syria is they had the human shields of American troops there. The Syrian army and the Russian Air Force and the Iranians didn't want to risk killing any Americans. And so you had all these American troops who are basically human shields for the Kurds. And the Kurds, like I say, they expanded. They took over. They've been taking over, gobbling up a lot of land in Syria, which is not their traditional homelands. And, nobody wants to put up with it. And by the Americans withdrawing, the Syrian Kurds know that, well, the gig is up. And they don't have to sit around and fight to the last man. They have other options. They can be reasonable. And I think they will, read the writing on the wall. And I think they're reading the writing on the wall right now. And that Turkey doesn't need to stay in Syria and occupy a hunk of Syria. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they probably accomplished what they wanted to already, which was not to genocide these people, but to force the Kurds to face reality that they're not going to be able to carve up, rewrite the map of the Middle East. And they're going to have to accept that they're going to be living as minorities in these four countries and just try to make the best of it. And, it's not of our business.
No, and where does all this leave President Assad? Because, I mean, from the perspective of the neocons and from the warmongers like Hillary Clinton, they must all be pretty disappointed because, obviously, President Assad has actually triumphed here, hasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, the initial battle in Syria, which was supported by the West, the initial attacks on the Syrian regime, which were supported by Western leaders and the Western press, were to extend what at the time was known as the Arab Spring into Syria and to lead a popular revolution. Now, obviously, this popular revolution helped lead to the rise of ISIS. It caused, other leaders had been, taken out in this sort of Arab Spring. Colonel Gaddafi lost his life and Libya was destabilized, and now the Arab Spring was spreading to Syria. Now, obviously, it's kind of stopped there. It's kind of petered out because President Assad is still the president of Syria. He is still the ruler of Syria. ISIS has been defeated. The US forces are pulling out. There might be pockets, tiny pockets or villages or tiny towns that are still holding out, that are surrounded or that have been sort of more or less left to their own devices after the vast majority of the fighting has been concluded. But the vast majority of the fighting has been concluded, and he has won. Where do you think that leaves him? And what do you think the Western world's next move will be against him, if there is any further move at all?
Well, yeah, he's the last man standing. He's standing, and it is thanks to having gotten assistance from Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah, who aren't the bad guys. They're not the bad guys. When you think back on that Arab Spring, where did it start? Actually, it started in Tunisia, and I guess it was that late 2010, late 2010. And there were demonstrations, and the demonstrations were not violent, at least not violent against the government. They were peaceful demonstrations, although you had people self-emulating, lighting themselves on fire as a form of protest, which for those of you listening, don't try that at home. It's really not a good form of protest. It spread to Egypt. In Egypt, they had, these social media organizing, maybe George Soros and all organized, but peaceful demonstrations against the longtime 30-year President Mubarak. And it was in Bahrain. And they were peaceful, and it was peaceful. At least they all started out peacefully. and Bahrain as well. Syria was calm. When all of this started, Syria was calm because President Assad was actually pretty popular. He was reasonably popular. He was a reformer. His father had ruled with a much more of an iron hand. And Bashar al-Assad was not the person, not the son who was being groomed to take over. He had gone off to London and studied eye surgery. And I think he was living in London. He got brought home after his brother died, and then he was the heir apparent, and he's taken over, and he was fairly popular. And when the Arab Spring reached Syria some months later, it never had the peaceful protest mode. It went straight to attacking army barracks and police stations. It was violent from the beginning. It had massive foreign infiltration from the beginning. And our own CIA, not that it's the best source of information, but our own CIA was saying that 80% of ISIS was coming from overseas. This was primarily a foreign invasion. He's the last man standing, and he should be standing, and Syria should be reunited under him, and maybe we'll get some calm. Now, your question is a really good question. It's the important question. I don't know if I can answer it. What next? And it's hard to say what next, because certainly you've got what we call the Washington establishment or the Zionist establishment, and they want something next. Maybe they want war between, a proxy war with Iran somehow. They bring Iran, who knows? But Donald Trump doesn't want to be involved in the Middle East, which is great. And, we know we can't count on him. We know that he's got a losing record as president, a big-time losing record. But his instincts are not to get involved in the Middle East. So we'll just have to see. I'm sorry, I can't answer your very important question. Where do you think this all leads to?
I don't know. I think there's too many things at the moment going against the whole sort of neocon Zionist war machine. Now, look, Donald Trump has been a disappointment, but he has pulled troops out. And this is always a very difficult thing to talk about, because unfortunately, there's too many people sort of on the fringes of our movement who deal in absolutes. So when I say that Donald Trump has done something good for nationalism, or Donald Trump has had some positive effects for our movement, I will always get somebody very angrily saying, oh, listen to Colin, shilling for Trump again, just shilling for Trump. But Trump has done some good things. Now, I know he dropped some bombs on Syria, which was very, very bad. I know that he hasn't been the strong, complete anti-war candidate we hoped for, but he has been far more anti-war than Hillary would have been. And he's been far more anti-war than any other American president in recent history. And he has made good on his promise to withdraw troops. Now, if you remember, Barack Obama, one of his big election promises was that he was going to close down Guantanamo Bay. Mm-hmm. Now, he never came anywhere near to making good on that. And because he was a darling of the media never held that promise up to any scrutiny. So I think that with Donald Trump in the White House, with the Arab Spring naturally petering out, with the vast majority of the people involved in the Arab Spring now being exposed as being something to do with ISIS or Al-Qaeda, I think the whole thing seems to have lost any steam, and I don't think there's any great will from Donald Trump to carry it on any further. So I think it's just going to be, I think that's going to be the end of it, more or less.
Let's hope so, and I think that is a possibility, especially that you have Russians over there, and the Russian influence is, not that they're altruistic, but it's a stabilizing influence. The Iranians are basically stabilizing influence. We'll be right back.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
We are back. Well, Mark, I think we've solved the Middle Eastern issue, and we'll take our Nobel Prize and move on. Maybe next we should solve the European issue. Starting with Brexit, and I understand that that they call him Down Syndrome Trump. And did he meet with the gay Pakistani that rules Ireland? Is he Pakistani or Indian?
I'm not sure he's been, but Boris has been meeting with a lot of people. Boris has been meeting with a lot of people and saying a lot of things. And I don't think Brexit is any closer to happening than it has been since we voted to leave the EU.
Well, it's just 17 days to Halloween, right? To the deadline.
Well, it was meant to be Brexit on the 31st, but I just can't see it happening. I can't see it happening. Parliament has ruled out no deal. They haven't struck a new deal. And if they do strike a new deal, Parliament will have a chance to vote that new deal down. So really, odds are that it won't happen. And the only thing that might happen that could be quite interesting is that Boris could actually throw in a major wild card. Boris could say, you know what? I'm going to push through no deal. I'm just going to sit on it and refuse to act on what Parliament does. The clock will tick down. It will tick over onto the 1st of November with a no deal Brexit. And because Parliament hasn't formally voted for a delay, that will be what it is. But would he do that? And if he does do that, would he face legal ramifications? Would he face, obviously he wouldn't be impeached, but he could technically face criminal trial for doing so. I think he will potentially, there is a chance that he will manage to thrash out some kind of deal. Every day we hear that is going to happen or it isn't. But I think whatever he thrashes out, even if he does manage to thrash out some kind of deal, I don't think Parliament will vote for it. And I think there's a variety of reasons why Parliament won't vote for it, not least because I don't think the deal would be wholly beneficial to the UK, but also because all the other parties want something out of this. Now, if you're Labour remain or Labour leave, I don't think it really matters. You still want to be in power. And everything that goes against Boris at this stage, everything that goes against the government's attempts to, well, alleged attempts to get us out of the EU, make them look more incompetent and bring us a step closer to them not being the government. And I think all of those things are very important things to actually consider. And I think as we move forward and we head towards the 31st, it's going to be a very, very interesting period. Because if Boris doesn't deliver on this, his credibility is going to be absolutely shredded. And because he doesn't have, because of the Fixed Parliament Act, because of the fact that Parliament now has to vote to allow a general election to go ahead, and he doesn't even have a majority in Parliament, he doesn't have the privilege former Prime Ministers had of being able to call a general election. So he is stuck under the Fixed Parliament Act, not being able to do anything, not being able to call a general election, which might see him gain a majority which would allow him to do anything. So really, he is, if you like, a hostage Prime Minister.
Wow. Now, he was meeting, and maybe you weren't paying attention to it because maybe it wasn't worth paying attention to, but he was meeting with the Irish Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar. Varadkar is not an Irish name. It's an Indian name. He doesn't look all that Indian, but at any rate, so he's half Indian, and is he half gay or is he fully gay? I guess he's fully gay. And they apparently were, there's some sort of compromise that Boris Johnson thought he might be able to strike with Ireland in order, because that whole Irish backstop, that land border, that one land border that the United Kingdom has with Ireland in Northern Ireland, that has been pointed to as a sticking point in this whole Brexit thing, although maybe that's more of just an excuse than anything else. Have you heard anything about this?
I've heard a little about it, and you are correct that the Irish backstop is the sticking point. But what I actually heard about it was that the Irish Prime Minister had said it was unacceptable, had said that what Boris Johnson was proposing wasn't acceptable. And again, you there have a foreign minister preventing us from leaving the EU, dictating what Britain needs to do in order to leave. And again, it puts us in a very bad light, and it puts Boris Johnson in a very bad light. And as I said, because he is a hostage prime minister, you know, he can't call a general election. He hasn't got a majority to pass the legislation he wants. He's just stuck there in no man's land. And I think what Jeremy Corbyn is hoping for is that Boris's majority is further decreased. He's further weakened. There is further infighting within the Conservative Party. And sooner rather than later, the Labour Party will then emerge, form some kind of coalition, and Jeremy Corbyn will end up as Prime Minister. Not Prime Minister via general election, but Prime Minister due to huge changes in Parliament, where the number of sitting MPs for the leading party is drastically reduced. And I don't know if there's ever been
reduced through defections. Through defections.
Yeah.
That type of thing has happened in Germany. I don't know if it's ever happened in England. Well, we will be back right after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to the show. It's the Monday show with Mark Collett. So, Mark, I remember in 1982, perhaps, sitting in a political science class and the professor saying, yes, we have a new helmet in Germany. So the prime minister had been Helmut Schmidt. And all of a sudden it became Helmut Kohl. And what had happened was Helmut Schmidt, who was the leader of the Social Democrats, which was a socialist party that had been ruling for about the previous 13 years. And it had been in coalition with the Free Democrats, which I guess is a maybe neoliberal free market type of party. And then the opposition had been the Christian Democrats. And what happened is one day the Free Democrats walked across the aisle. They just walked across the aisle and formed a majority with the Christian Democrats. Now, probably the Prime Minister, Helmut Schmidt, he probably could have just dissolved Parliament and called new elections, but maybe he thought that he would lose the new elections anyway. And so rather than calling new elections, the parliament just voted for a new prime minister. There were no elections, and all of a sudden, the prime minister became the opposition, and the opposition became the ruling party. Now, I know that Britain and the German parliamentary system is largely copied off the British, but the British have they've they have done some revisions to their system. I don't know if the same type of thing could happen in Britain or not. And I guess that's what we're talking about.
Well, I've got to be honest. I don't actually know if that will happen. I don't know if it's happened before, but it could definitely happen now. And what would be very, very interesting is if it did happen, it would essentially deliver power on a plate to Jeremy Corbyn, which would be very interesting indeed. And it would be interesting because Jeremy Corbyn has been an incredible fence sitter throughout this whole Brexit process. He originally, before he became leader of the Labour Party, quite famously was very, very critical of the EU, and potentially, had he remained just a radical backbencher, he would potentially have been pro-leave. He would have potentially been somebody who would have campaigned to leave. But obviously, because he was the leader of the Labour Party, and the Labour Party is, again, just like the Conservative Party, the vast majority of constituencies, Labour constituencies, voted to leave. But the majority of Labour MPs voted Remain. So there's a huge split between the Labour voter and the Labour Party hierarchy, specifically the parliamentary party. So that put Jeremy Corbyn into a very interesting situation because he couldn't really do as he wished. He couldn't really oppose the EU anymore. And throughout that particular referendum campaign, he was very quiet, which annoyed many people in the Labour Party. Now, eventually, he was sort of cajoled into saying that people should vote Remain, but he didn't really campaign for it. He didn't campaign hard for it anyway. And at the time, he got a lot of condemnation for that amongst his own party, because, as I said, the parliamentary party, and quite specifically, not just the parliamentary party, but many of the activists were hardcore Remainers. So at that point, he was criticised quite heavily from within for not doing what they wanted.
Now, why?
But at the same time, his heart wasn't in it, and he knew that the majority of Labour voters' hearts weren't in it. So very interesting situation.
Okay,
really.
So you're saying that the typical Labour voter, they're not hardcore Remainers, and perhaps they're pro Brexit. The typical Labour voter is the typical Labour voter pro Brexit, but the typical Labour MP is pro Remain. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and he basically, Corbyn fought, I'm just looking here, he said, you know, he was very critical of the European Union. And as I said, if he'd remained just a backbencher, I'm pretty sure he would have campaigned to leave. But in the end, he supported what he called basically Remain and Reform, where he was critical of the European Union's structures and decisions. I mean, here's a quote from him. Over the years, I have been critical of many decisions taken by the EU, and I remain critical of its shortcomings, from its lack of democratic accountability to the institutional pressure to deregulate or privatise public services. He summarised his stance as being for Remain and Reform in Europe, because Jeremy Corbyn is a communist. He makes no bones about that. He is a communist. And the EU, although it has culturally Marxist social policy, it is very much a capitalist entity. It's quite strange, really, because it has all the cultural Marxism, sort of the communism for export that the old Eastern Bloc exported to the West to destroy it. But
I don't really think that cultural Marxism really came from the East. I think it came from the echoey people.
When I say from the East, let me explain.
Okay.
There was communism in the East, and communism in the East was very different from communism in the West. And when I say communism for export, the echoey people in the West, the echoey people, pushed cultural Marxism what became now is what people say, oh, look at the Antifa, look at the commies, they all support LGBT, they all support the transgenders, they support mass immigration and Black Lives Matters. And when I say communism for export, the echoey people who were running the Eastern Bloc and were firmly behind the Bolshevik Revolution then brought about what I call communism for export to the West. Now, the communism in the East was very, very different. It wasn't pro-LGBT, it wasn't pro-transgender, it was pro-strength. It was brutal, mm-hmm. but the people were meant to be strong because ultimately they wanted to invade the West at some point. And communism for export was the cultural Marxism that the echoey people brought to the West to weaken the West mm-hmm. over time. Mm-hmm. Because the Soviet bloc, if it was still in existence, would still have family values. It wouldn't have mass immigration. It wouldn't have children listening to Drag Queen Story Hour. But the West would be, you know, several huge steps closer to being emasculated, feminized, weak, degenerate. And that kind of cultural Marxism used against the West was to soften it up over a long period of time so it would eventually be susceptible to invasion from the East.
Wow. Hey, that just reminded me of something. Over the weekend, I was sitting in a room with somebody, and that person was playing some YouTube video. And it was a bunch of clips. You were hearing drag, you know, interviewers with drag time interviews of drag queens from Drag Queen Story Hour. And you were hearing all of these various news reports. And I was listening to thinking, yeah, this guy's listening to an alt-right podcast. And then it occurred to me that, you know, that was 100% entirely made up of local news that was actually being local news stories in support of things like mass immigration, in support of things like Drag Time Story Queen or whatever it is. And I was talking to the young man and he said, well, yeah, the people who are doing this are basically daring YouTube to label them as hate speech because they're not putting in any commentary. They are simply stringing together a whole bunch of excerpts from pro-left-wing local newscasts. And so it's the truth hate, you know, that's and I thought, hey, that's actually really, really interesting. Have you ever heard that before? Come across anything like that?
No, I haven't. But the thing that I wanted to add to what I was saying earlier, and I've been I've been Googling this. If you have a look at this, KGB defector Yuri Bezmenov, he has done there's a couple of YouTube videos with him talking about this kind of stuff, and it is more or less what I'm saying, that there was, you know, cultural Marxism or communism for export was something that was foisted upon the West to weaken it in every way, because the Soviets knew that the West was very liberal in the sense that if a Western advocate had come to a Soviet bloc country and started preaching and demanded a place on television or in the town square where he could talk about the wonders of the West, at best, he would have been brutally shut up. At worst, he would have been actually executed. Whereas they knew that the West, with its liberal outlook, would actually hear out their whatever they put in front of them. So they knew that if they put people in front of Western audiences, there was this liberal thought in amongst the Western audiences that you should hear out your enemies, that you should at least listen to what they have to say. And listening to what your enemies had to say, Bezmenov stated, that's the first step towards accepting what your enemies have to say. And it's a fascinating interview. It's about an hour and a half long. Mm. It's very amusing. The guy's quite disarming and charming in the way he puts these things over. But it's very important to listen to, because we obviously know who was behind both types of communism and what it was being used for. I just recommend people have a listen.
Very interesting. because I initially pushed back at the term cultural Marxist because, Marx, for instance, I mean, Marx had all sorts of weird ideas, but drag queen story hour actually wasn't one of them. A lot of the things that we talk about as culturally Marxist have nothing to do with Marx. But of course, there's a whole army of people who call themselves Marxists, who follow Marx and try to apply, Marx's 19th century writing to all sorts of 21st century issues. And, that's probably, you could probably trace down cultural Marxism, not to Marx himself, but to his modern day followers. So I stopped pushing back against it. And when you say cultural Marxism, everybody knows what you're talking about. So I guess it's a reasonable term to use. Communism for export as opposed to domestic communism, to kind of distinguish that you have one type of policies aimed at maybe solidifying your rule within your own country and strengthening your own power, and then you have another set of policies that you try to export in order to weaken potential adversaries. That's a very interesting concept. So I just wonder how much of what we talk about cultural Marxism, how much of it really would come from Soviets. Because, you hear nowadays, oh, the Russians are just trying to sow division. This is the hot take of the Zio media, that the Russians are trying to sow divisions, as if we never had divisions before. But, maybe there's an incentive to do that. I just think that most likely it wasn't, Brezhnev era Soviets who were successfully promoting this stuff as our own homegrown Jews, your hippie writers from the 1960s, Allen Ginsberg and whoever else. Who was the feminist icon who later served in Congress? Oh, I mean, there's been a whole bunch of Jewish feminist icons, but I don't know. So do you think that the Soviet bloc had a significant role in what we call cultural Marxism, or that maybe they were pushing it, but they didn't really make that much of an impact? What do you think?
I think the whole thing is quite an interesting and tangled web. But the people who were pushing the cultural Marxism, they were communists. They were communists with little hats. And they obviously wanted
communists with little hats. Actually, that's another good one. Echoey people, communists with little hats. That's another good
And they clearly wanted the West to fall, because they weren't bringing about a traditional form of communism in the West. I think they'd realized by this point that they weren't going to bring about a workers' revolution in the West. They weren't going to, the miners and the steel workers and the people who worked in the shoe factories and the shipyards, they weren't going to rise up and overthrow parliamentary democracy. That wasn't going to happen. And once that was realized, I think what they did to us was far more insidious, because I think we both said this before, that communism in the East was absolutely horrific and it was very brutal, and any dissenters were quickly done away with, sent to the gulag. The death toll in the Eastern Bloc countries was horrendous, and any country that stepped out of line had horrendous consequences, and it led to things like the Holodomor. You've got 8 to 10 million native sort of indigenous Ukrainians wiped out via forced starvation, man-made famine, because they weren't, in the eyes of the Soviet leadership, playing the game. They weren't towing the line. And it was very brutal. But at the end of it, when the Iron Curtain fell, when the wall was torn down, the people were intact.
Mm-hmm.
they were still family units. They were still of European descent. Mm-hmm. They still valued the nuclear family. They still had moral values. They were strong people. And now when we look to the east, in places that obviously are former constituent territories of the USSR, we look to the east and we see strong, moral, upstanding people who value tradition, heritage, culture. They respect their elders, and their countries are essentially much nicer than Western European countries.
They still now, have their Western countries.
Sorry?
They still have their countries.
They do, and they have a lot more than their countries. They have their people.
Right,
whereas
their people.
We in the West, what have we lost? Well, cultural Marxism that was imposed on us to weaken us has done far more damage to us in the long term than the other type of Marxism did to the Eastern.
Very, very important point. Okay, we'll be right back.
Folks, this is very important information. What's to be said about CBD? AncientLifeOil.com. Our CBD is made from hemp and has 0.003 THC, which means this wonderful product won't get you high, no matter what amount you take. What does CBD do for the body? My hands are tied, but you can Google CBD benefits and be astounded. When you're finished reading, you'll want to log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. And purchase. Life is good when you feel good. People are tired of pain. People are asking for non-GMO organic products to help them with, you fill in the blank. Legal in 49 states, and again, our CBD is made from hemp. Ancient Life Oil is about helping people, one by one by one. If you wonder how good the product is, the CEO takes it every day without miss. AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Have a great day.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back to the show. So, Mark, I think you were making the same point at the end, just before the break, as I was making about the Kurds earlier in the show, is that the Eastern Europeans, communism wasn't a walk in the park for them, but they emerged from it and they still had their people. And the Kurds, they're not going to be genocided. They are going to emerge from this and they'll still have their people. Their people won't have a state. They're not going to have an ethno state. Well, we don't have an ethno state either. But they're going to have their people. But that's not necessarily the case in most white countries, is it?
No, it's not. And that's the big issue. The big issue is the wall may have fallen. We may now be living in a sort of post-Soviet era. But the kind of hangover from that is the poison. I mean, think of it like this. In Vietnam, people still talk about the effects of Agent Orange. You know, the war's over, the Americans lost. But the poison they dropped, all the, you know, defoliant they dropped, all the material that they covered Vietnam with to try and, you know, destroy the foliage so they could see where the guerrilla bases were and weed out the Viet Cong fighters, that's had a catastrophic effect. And it's kind of similar here in the West. The Soviet bloc may have collapsed. The Soviet bloc may be gone now, but the poison that the cultural Marxist acting on their behalf poured out, sort of dumped into the minds of the Western populace to try and soften them up for eventual Soviet invasion, that's had lasting effects. When the Soviet Union fell, the cultural Marxism didn't withdraw with it. It was like the Agent Orange. It stayed there. And just as the Vietnamese people are still suffering to this day because of the effects of the chemicals used in the Vietnam War, we are still suffering to this day because of the cultural Marxism that was implanted in our people's minds as a weapon during the Cold War.
I think the people doing the planting were probably maybe pro-communist American Jews, maybe pro-Soviet American Jews, rather than the Soviets themselves.
Yeah, well, of course, they were working to soften up America because they wanted nothing more than America to fall. And quite interestingly, I genuinely believe that, say, Western Europe, say the Soviet bloc was still in effect to this day, and Western Europe had completely fallen into a state of social disarray because of mass immigration, a large Muslim population, the youngsters all turning to drugs, sexual deviance, and all manner of other madnesses. And the Soviet bloc had invaded and taken, you know, Germany and France and just rolled through Europe. Who do you think the first people would have been to have gone up against the wall? Well, it would have probably been those who had been undermining society. It would have probably been, and I don't mean the people who implanted the madness, but I can tell you now, had the Soviets invaded Western Europe, they wouldn't have had rioting immigrant groups causing problems. They wouldn't have had the LGBT lobby marching down the street. There would have been a mass purge, and they would have purged the disruptive people within society.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for being on the show again. And you have a show on Wednesday. I want everybody to tune into that. That's a very good show. And then you put out these great videos every Friday. And people can see you. You still have your YouTube channel, but you're moving as much of you can as your audience over to BitChute, right?
I'm trying to get people over to BitChute because it's a free speech platform. I'm still producing content for YouTube. It's very different, it is tailored now to the YouTube guidelines. But yeah, I would very much like it if people went and sub me on BitChute.
Okay, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.